he's not going to concede. And he's going to do everything in his power with the assistance of his complicit enablers in Congress to remain in power.
Welcome to episode 30 of Inside Without Now, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of this show. It's been 19 days since the election and more than 2 weeks since the results were called for Joe Biden, with more than 6 million more popular votes than Trump. And 306 electoral votes, assuming the electors will be selected according to the state's popular vote. This was a decisive victory. Trump is continuing attempts to overturn the results of the election. While the media is finally starting to call him a liar, and his legitimacy is more apparent than ever, he's not a lame duck, impotently waiting to move back to Mar-a-Lago. He's attempting to carry out a coup. Giuliani and his lawyers are spreading a barrage of outlandish lies, tied to lawsuits filed in various states that, while unlikely to succeed as lawsuits, contribute to dominating the public discourse with lies that the election results weren't real. His rabid fascist base is protesting in the streets, including violent groups like the Proud Boys and other openly fascist forces. And he is providing ample encouragement with a stream of lies distributed through his social media accounts and media networks more virulent than Fox. He's called Michigan legislators to D.C. to strong-arm them to disregard the results of the election in their states. Lindsey Graham has been pressuring the Secretary of State in Georgia to throw out Biden ballots. Whether or not this coup is successful, and it likely won't be, terrible damage is being done. His rabid, racist followers are amped up, marauding the streets just yesterday in Georgia and in Huntington Beach in California. Kyle Rittenhouse has been bailed out on a $2 million bond. Remember Kyle Rittenhouse, who this regime defended, who murdered two Black Lives Matter protesters in Kenosha? He was bailed out after receiving donations from 80s actor Ricky Schroeder and the Trump-obsessed CEO of MyPillow. They are becoming hardened, this fascist base, strengthened and more organized. And there are 59 days left before Inauguration Day. Then there is the death and suffering. A quarter of a million people are now dead from COVID-19, with the highest infection and death rates in areas most affected by the fascist propaganda machine devaluing science and the value of human life. It continues to be true that those most disproportionately affected by this virus are Black, Latinx, and Native peoples, who this genocidal regime would so easily erase. Countless lives are endangered by the Trump-Pence regime's blocking of the Biden transition team. In light of all of this, Refuse Fascism has been mobilizing people this weekend around these demands. Trump, you lost. Get the hell out. Stop trying to overturn the election. Stop your murderous COVID program. Stop your dangerous war moves. Stop whipping up MAGA fascist mobs. Trump Pence out now. With their hands still on the levers of power, this regime continue to do tremendous harm. This fascist Trump Pence regime must continue to feel the heat of the people's righteous demand that they must go. Every move that they make to illegitimately stay in power, overturn the election, must be met by people on the side of justice and for humanity standing up in the streets, nonviolently, defiantly, with justice and electoral victory behind us, to say, no, Trump Pence, out now. In New York City, Los Angeles, Houston, Cleveland, and other cities yesterday refused fascism, held demonstrations making these demands. In Philly, we went to the Trump National Golf Course in Pine Hill, New Jersey, to ceremoniously rename the place the Trump National Mass Grave. In New York City, body bags were delivered to Trump International Hotel. In Atlanta, protesters mobilized against the Trump MAGA mob. In Chicago today, protesters gathered to counter these Trump thugs and raise this demand. Trump, you lost. Get the hell out now. Sometimes we have to listen to the perspectives of people who live outside the borders of the U.S. to get the clearest picture of what all this chaos really adds up to and represents. Today, we're going to be talking to Andrew Mitrovica, a journalism instructor, writer, and media commentator based in Toronto, Canada, about his November 15th piece in Al Jazeera, Americans Need to Remain Vigilant.
Because I have no social media presence, people have to search out for me, like you did. It doesn't take a lot, but they need to take that extra step. Yeah. I'm beginning to feel this kind of responsibility because I know that I'm speaking on behalf of so many other people across the globe when I write my columns, and that I know that other people want to say it and wish they could say it and have the opportunity to say it on a platform that, you know, their Facebook account has 14 million followers. I don't need social media. I work for an organization that has 7 million Twitter followers, 14 million Facebook followers. Then the flood of response to my work email, it just reinforces my commitment to telling the truth as bluntly as I can, because my style is blunt.
And I think that was why I thought our audience needed to hear from you even more, because it was incredibly clarifying. Not only was there no sugarcoating, but there was no
euphemism.
There was no euphemism. There was nothing extraneous about it. Yes, it was, this is what we're confronted by.
Yes.
And let's look at it in the light of day. Let's look at it in the light of day for what it is.
And I've listened to your colleague. I listened to some of the podcasts. And yes, we have to be blunt now. We can't obfuscate. We've got to be blunt. The times demand blunt, sharp language. And that's why I wrote the column. I wrote an earlier column where I don't know if you saw it, but I said I wasn't going to wish him well.
And he got sick. I did see that one.
Because I knew, not only did I feel that, but millions of people felt that. No. This man has forfeited any concern. He's responsible for the deaths of 250,000 Americans by his incompetence and mismanagement and greed and his fascistic nature. And it's not a nature, it's a defining aspect of his character. But the so-called elite media in the United States refrains from using that word, not because it's offensive to their audience, but it's offensive to them. Their sensibilities can't tolerate using that blunt, sharp word, right? Even though it's true. It's the same dynamic when they were so slow to recognize that this man was a liar. And then they had to write editorials and explanations to their audience as to why they were now converting to a one-syllable word that described this man's nature, that he's a lie. Everything he says is a lie. But it took them years to reach that point. Not because they felt that it was going to offend Mr. Trump, but because it was going to offend their understanding of their country and their leadership. Oh, my goodness. We are led by liars. And he's not the first liar to lead the United States of America. And I can assure you, I live in Canada. We have a liar in chief as well, who wears blackface and repeatedly as an adult. And I wrote a column saying that he too is just a charlatan. He should resign. He should have resigned. But the same dynamic that is afoot now in the resistance of the elite, so-called elite media, to use the word fascist, the same dynamic was in play when they resisted to using the word lie.
I think that that's an important way to get into a question that I had been thinking about that only became more stark today with the two different press conferences that happened. You had the Rudy Giuliani press conference in which the press, if you look at what you call elite, I call mainstream media, and all the talk and Twitter abuzz about Rudy Giuliani's dripping hair down.
Yes,
real substance about what the consequence to any illusion of democracy that there was in this country. And then the other press conference today that Pence held, in which it was allegedly a coronavirus task force press conference, the first in how many months, when we reached this horrific milestone of 250,000 dead. And it ends without a question, without the press being able to answer a single question.
Yeah, this is fascism defined. There is no debate about it anymore. There shouldn't be a debate about it anymore. And as I said in my piece, these more demure types who are struggling with the semantics of the word, we are far beyond debating whether or not this administration, and particularly the president of the United States and the vice president of the United States and his enablers, are fascists. That's a given now. And anybody who denies that is, dare I say it, lying.
One of the most common that the media tends to give airtime to, and you spoke to it in your article very movingly, was the sore loser. The narrative of this is the final tantrum of someone on their way out. It's a sore loser. This is what happens with a narcissist.
Yes.
What do you think that the implications are?
Again,
if somebody thinks that they're a sore loser versus if we identify them as a fascist, why does that difference matter?
Because the people who use that trope are more comfortable. It's more palatable. It's more palatable to say to your audience, oh, he's a narcissist. He's a narcissist. That's a given too. But to describe what he is doing, what he's undertaking, what he has done for the past 4 years as the act of a petulant child really denies the insidious character and defining nature of this man. But again, I go back, elite mainstream media, whatever you want to call it, using this trope of the petulant child is more palatable for them because they do not want to publicly acknowledge, even though they claim that they are apostles of the truth now. They are part of the resistance. People like Dave Frum and the rest of them, that suddenly they have the Lincoln Project, that they are part of the resistance. No. You're never going to hear the Lincoln Project call the president of the United States a fascist. You're never going to hear Dave Frum call the president of the United States a fascist, because they would then have to concede and acknowledge the essential character of the government of the United States of America. And that's unpalatable for them. They can't do that. So this is why they use these tropes, because it's more comforting to regurgitate these lies about who and what Trump is and what his administration represents. That's why they'd use this language. Because fascism, it's a sharp, blunt word, but they prefer euphemisms. You'll hear them say stuff like, he has authoritarian tendencies, or he's unpredictable or chaotic. Whereas when you and I and our listeners understand that he is a fascist, that hurts them. That hurts their fragile sensibilities. Most of the people who now claim in the mainstream media to be part of the so-called resistance. And until they acknowledge the fact that the US government is led by a fascist who is supported by fascists, because many of the 73 million people who supported him, and again, you read the mainstream media, the establishment press. No, we have to understand them. We have to appreciate their insecurities and the fact that the... No. Do these people forget that before and during and after America entered the Second World War, there were fascist brown shirts filling Madison Square Gardens and giving Hitlerian salutes? Do people in the United States have any memory whatsoever of the deep roots of fascism in the United States of America? My goodness, this is not a new phenomenon. Any undergraduate history student in the United States should be familiar with the fascistic nature of American history. That is not an exaggeration. That is not hyperbole. It is the truth. And Mr. Trump is simply the latest manifestation of that part of the essential nature of America. To answer your point, it's just more palatable to use euphemism than to use a short, sharp, accurate word called fascist.
I think one of the lines that stuck out to me that I had underlined several times, but here's the thing about fascists. Fascists do not joke. Fascists do not abide by norms. Fascists do not respect the rule of law. Fascists do not care a whit about the damage, pain, and suffering they cause. And fascists do not concede.
Yes.
And I thought that to me, that speaks a lot to why it is that so many do not use that language, because once you do, you're forcing yourself and others to fully reckon with the fact
yes.
that the very institutions that you're used to telling people to rely on, yes. those fascists are shredding and making defunct. You kind of alluded to this in your remarks, but I just wanted to probe into this a little deeper because I think it is a big question out there. Why did over 70 million vote for Trump? Half the country says they're okay with kids in cages, concentration camps, mass COVID death, environmental destruction, white supremacy, theocracy, American first xenophobia. Why do you think this is, and what do we do about this?
I wrote a column the day after the election where
we know America.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that the myth of America, this Reaganite, that soppy, sentimental tripe about America being a shining city on a hill. And that, again, is a comforting myth. It's, oh, yes, we're a shining city on a hill. And what I wrote is, no, much of America, not all of America, but much of America is a black hole where reason, decency, civility, good sense, science, the truth go to die. They go to die there. And that's what those 72 million supporters of Donald Trump, that's the America. They support black hole America. And that is not a reflection. As I said, I'm tired of these, even on the liberal side of the ledger, Sigmund Freud wannabes who want to, again, comfort themselves by looking for some other emotional, psychological understanding of what has always been present in the American experience. I wrote a piece for Al Jazeera in the first year of his tenure as president, where I wrote, he's a fascist. In the first year of, and I looked at his historical antecedents that led up to Trump. So people who had an understanding of history, who weren't blinded by these comforting myths about much of America, understood the essential character of this man. Why do these people support him? Because they are racists. They are bigots. They are, like him, illiterate. They have no historical literacy. They do not read. If they read, they absorb themselves in these lunatic conspiracy theories. And that, again, is uncomfortable for people to admit that these people support this man because of who and what he is. And that is something that America has to come to terms with. And when I say America, I say in particular the mainstream media, they have to finally come to terms. And you can see them struggling with this, right? They constantly say, this is not normal. No, you are mistaken. It is normal. It is normal for and has been normal for much of America's history, not for all of America. There is an enlightened America. There is an America that believes in fact, believes in science, believes in decency. But there is another America that people simply do not want to acknowledge exists because it's too painful. It's unpalatable. How do we change this? First off, we have to admit the truth of the essential character of his supporters. We cannot make excuses anymore about them. I read this piece, an op-ed writer, he said, I tried talking to Trump supporters, I give up. Yeah. And I suspect that there is an impenetrable idiocy. It does not matter. We cannot convince them. They are unconvincible. I think Americans have to come to terms with that this will be, and has been, as I've said, pointed out, a constant in the American experience. So to ask me, what can we do about it? Well, you can only do what you do. You do what I try to do. And that is to raise a flag and to say, we must confront it. We must confront fascists, because if we do not confront it, we will be overwhelmed by these people. And so I'm not interested in convincing Donald Trump or his followers to change their worldview. It's impossible. The only thing that we can do as anti-fascists is to stand up to them and to tell the truth about them, and not to make excuses for them, not to dismiss them, not to suggest they are children or petulant children, that these are simply emotional spasms. No, I can't control them. I can't change them. I don't think you can do it either, Samantha, but we can only do what we can do, and that is confront them.
I think that that's a really important point, especially because they're continuing to be mobilized.
Yes.
That it's illusory, and anyone that continues to project this into the world is delusional at this point. The notion that these people will just peacefully retreat and go back to the sewers from which they came just doesn't correspond to anything that we've seen over the past 4 years. They've become more emboldened and
they are organized
and strengthened and organized.
They have leadership. I used to cover, as an investigative reporter, neo-Nazi organizations, white supremacists. And there was this notion afoot of this leaderless resistance. They have a leader. He's in the White House.
He still has the levers of his hands on the levers.
Right?
Of power.
They are organized. They are more astute than many people give them credit for. I might call them idiots. Why do I call them idiots? And you say that they emerge from a sewer. And that's where they do emerge from. These people emerge from sewers. But there is that sinister, and we've seen it. The world has experienced it. We cannot underestimate how sinister these sewer dwellers are. And people will be offended by the fact that you and I have used the word sewer to describe where fascists come from, but that's where they come from. They come from the sewer. Because what do fascists do? What do fascists do? They annihilate people. That's what they do. They murder innocents. Let's speak bluntly. That's what they do. They kill innocents. They kill people for their faith. They kill people because of what they look like. They kill people because of what they believe in. That's what they do. They kill. They kill, they murder, they destroy. So when I hear the mainstream media getting shocked at this language, oh my goodness, it's so hyperbolic. Oh, how can you say people emerge from a sewer? Aren't you just like them? No, I am not like them. I do not emerge from a sewer. I read, I think, I love, I don't harm. These people, no, I'm sorry. So when you ask me, what can we do about it? What we have to do about it is what you're doing. And that's why I've agreed to speak to you, because you and your compatriots are doing the honorable thing, the right thing, the just thing. You are organizing, you are recognizing the threat that these people pose, and you are standing up to fascists. And more people need to do that. And I believe that Americans, good Americans, yes, I'm going to use that word, good, not evil, good Americans, are standing up to the evil among them. And they are saying, no, we will not tolerate this. We will not tolerate your evil. We will not tolerate the harm that you are going potentially and have caused and will cause. We will not allow history to repeat itself again and again and again. It stops, and it stops now.
I really appreciate all that you did in your article, this particular article, but in many articles, in terms of what our responsibility is. Your article ending with the need to be vigilant. And I just wanted to end with a two-part question.
Sure.
We just learned today about the Michigan GOP lawyers being flown to DC to meet with Trump at his request. Yes. And I'm wondering two things. What do you see are the most likely scenarios to be played out? And more, even more important, what should we be paying most close attention to?
We should be paying close attention to the President of the United States of America and his enablers in Congress. Because I was watching a little bit of CNN before I came on here, because in order to critique it, I have to endure it. So they're still in this state of shock. You can see it registered on their faces. My goodness, he's still doing it. Now he's gone on this fantastical effort to try to overturn the franchise of Americans by convincing state legislators, Republican state legislators who are loyal to him, this cannot happen, they say. It's impossible. Well, where have you been for the last 4 years? In some kind of self-induced coma? My goodness, have you learned nothing about this man and his regime? It's a regime. Remember, it's not an administration. American mainstream media loves to call other governments regimes, right? Because it has a certain connotation, historical connotation. This is a regime. And this regime, as I wrote, knows no norms, does not respect the rule of law. So where does this go? Well, I'm like you, to some extent watching, but like you and your compatriots, we are not being beguiled by the mainstream media into this false sense of complacency. Oh, just chill. Take a deep breath. It's impossible. It's not going to happen. Well, he's still there. And as you rightly pointed out, Samantha, he's still the most powerful man on the face of the earth. And to dismiss the most powerful man on the face of the earth with the admonition to chill is so foolish and short-sighted. I'm not chilling. I'm not chilling. I can breathe, but I'm not going to be taking a deep breath until that man and that regime is forcibly evicted from the White House, if necessary. Until then, I don't know what's going to happen, because I know that fascists are capable of anything. And we know that if you've read your history. So I don't know what's going to happen, Samantha. But what I do know is he's not going to concede. And he's going to do everything in his power with the assistance of his complicit enablers in Congress to remain in power. That I do know. And that is the seminal battle that is now underway in the United States of America. if the American mainstream media wants to acknowledge it in blunt terms or not. So to answer your question, I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to be good.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for doing this. It was such a pleasure to talk with you and learn from you. And I can't wait to read your next article. Thanks for listening to Inside Without Now. Be sure to subscribe for the latest and rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more listeners. Hope you'll join us on Tuesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, for a forum titled What Just Happened? Trump, America, and the Danger of Fascism, featuring Andy Z, Coco Das, Indy Samarajiva, and Jeff Charlotte. This forum is presented by RefuseFascism.org and The RNL Show. And you can watch this forum on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter at Refuse Fascism. I hope that you will donate to support forums like this one and the mobilization of protests demanding that Trump, Pence pack their bags and leave. You can give at RefuseFascism.org by clicking the donate button, or Venmo, Refuse-Fascism, or give via Cash App, Refuse Fascism. If you haven't signed up for text alerts or emails from Refuse Fascism, do so today to stay connected. Go to RefuseFascism.org and fill up the sign-up form. While you're there, check out where protests are happening near you. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Trump Pence, out now. I'll see you in the streets.